As President Biden prepares to sign the infrastructure bill into law on Monday, and the first electoral redistricting maps are being passed in states across the country, many Americans have turned their focus to the rising cost of goods from food to gasoline. Here to discuss all this and more, we are joined by Capehart and Abernathy. That is Jonathan Capehart, columnist for The Washington Post, and Gary Abernathy, an Ohio-based writer and contributing columnist also for The Washington Post. David Brooks is away. It's very good to see both of you.
You too, Judy. You too.
So at a time when we don't see, Jonathan, a lot of bipartisanship in this city, there was a bipartisan vote after we finished our conversation last Friday night, passing, and it is headed to the president. But we have to point out, most Republicans ended up in the House voting against it. And then you had President Trump saying he was ashamed of that the 13 Republicans who voted for it should be ashamed of themselves. So how bipartisan was it?
Well, it was bipartisan in that you did have 13 Republicans vote for it. And at a time when we don't see this sort of thing anymore, that should be applauded, especially now that those 13 are getting threats. They're getting threatened, their committee assignments are being threatened, some are getting death threats. One of their colleagues called them traitors for voting for something that generations of Republicans have supported, even the former president, even Donald Trump. What was the big joke? Infrastructure Week was every week during the Trump administration. He talked about it all the time, and yet now that it's happening in the Biden administration, it's something that's bad. This is a great thing for the country.
How bipartisan? Is it a great thing, and how bipartisan was it truly?
It should have been much more bipartisan. It should have had many, many more Republican votes. It was a great thing, long overdue. You know, I don't like the price tag. $1 trillion is an awful lot of money, but we have to understand it's been years and years where we've neglected this. And so this is money we should have been spending all along. You know, I think a lot of Republicans were conditioned against it because for so long it was yoked to the other bill. It was yoked to the Build Back Better bill. And so they felt like a victory for one was going to lead to a victory for the other. And the Build Back Better bill is an entirely different animal. But when they uncoupled that, when Nancy Pelosi uncoupled that from the other bill, Republicans should have really voted for this a lot more than they did. So I think it's very disappointing. And Jonathan's exactly right. President Trump was an advocate for the infrastructure spending when he was in office. And it's a bit hypocritical to be against it now.
Well, speaking of lack of partisanship or lack of bipartisanship, this was a week for some pretty ugly rhetoric, Jonathan. We had Congressman Paul Gosar of Arizona posting this cartoon of him killing another member of Congress, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and then you had, and he said it was all about her position on immigration, and then separately we have this new audio recording of President Trump defending the crowd back in January in the attack on the Capitol, saying, "Hang Mike Pence," his own vice president, and his argument is, "Well, this is just common sense. They were angry. They were worked up." Where are we with all this? Is there any turning back?
I don't know if there's any turning back. Excuse me, Judy. And I say I don't know if there's any turning back because there is an incredible silence among Republican leaders. Leave aside Donald Trump, and no one's surprised to hear him say what he said about Hang Mike Pence. The problem is, and the question is, where is House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy? Leader is in his title. He should have said something immediately about Congressman Gosar. He should have said something immediately about Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene calling the 13 Republicans who voted for the infrastructure bill, quote, traitors. He should have been out there and should be continuously out there saying, this is not who we are as Republicans. This is not who we are as a party. This is not who we are as a caucus. Because if the leader of the caucus doesn't set an example rhetorically or even by his actions, then the Paul Gosars and the Marjorie Taylor Greens are given, no pun intended, green lights to keep doing the things that they're doing, which is creating an atmosphere of menace around the Capitol that has been there since January 6th. Congresswoman Cori Bush moved her office from next door to Marjorie Taylor Greene because of the menace. Marjorie Taylor Greene has gotten into fights with Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, Congressman Jamie Raskin. And she's able to do that because House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy hasn't said anything. And the idea that he has not said anything about this Paul Gosar video that Twitter had the good sense to finally take down tells me all I need to know about how fearful and concerned we should be about a Speaker McCarthy if the Republicans take control of the House in next term, next year's midterms.
Gary, who is responsible for this? And is, do you see a turning back from this kind of language?
I hope they're turning back. And I think that it needs to come from everybody in Congress saying, wait a minute, I'm in the United States Congress. I'm not a 12-year-old playing some kind of video game here. But I don't want to be accused of both-siderism here, and I will be anyway. But I do think, I think back to a lot of the memes and so on that members of the Democratic Party were retweeting about Donald Trump when he was in office that are pretty disgusting. You know, I think of Nancy Pelosi after Trump finishes a State of the Union address dramatically ripping up the pages of his address. These are all things that we should be a little bit better than that in Congress. These are members of the United States Congress who should not be engaging in these kind of 12-year-old antics.
Gary, there's a big difference standing up at the end of the president's speech and ripping it up, because I remember that speech, there was a lot in it to be angry about in terms of who we are as the American people. So the big difference between that and a member of Congress putting out an anime video superimposing the face of someone from the opposing party where that person is killed. Yeah, also, we didn't mention how that there's also a figure with the president's face who was also attacked in that video. That's not the same thing.
I'm condemning all of it, Jonathan. I agree with you on that. But I'm saying that if you think that it's just all one way, that's what I'll disagree with.
And turning back, you're saying you hope.
Yeah.
Totally changing the subject. inflation. We got some bad numbers this week about how fast it's rising in the country. Jonathan, it's bad news for all Americans. And it's politically, it's not good news for the president. What are his options when it comes to this?
Gosh, when it comes to inflation, I am not sure. I mean, one thing all of us around this table know, and that most Americans don't, or understandably don't care, the president doesn't have any control over the economy. Presidents can crow about great unemployment numbers, and folks will give them credit. Folks will complain about bad unemployment numbers, and folks will be angry with them. People will be angry with the president because inflation is high. They're seeing it at the gas pump. They're seeing it in the grocery aisle. They're seeing it with furniture stores and new and used cars. I don't know what the president can do that is going to squash this. This is the highest it's been year to year in 30 years. And what actually makes this even more concerning is that while the president is saying, this is temporary, meaning maybe 6 months or so, but this is not in isolation only in the United States. 24 hours after the U.S. announced its inflation number, so did Japan and China. They also had spikes. Japan, the highest in 40 years. So this is a problem for the president. It is.
A problem. And I'm going to disagree that there's nothing the president can do. I think one thing you can do immediately is not spend another $2 trillion that we don't have. It's kind of economics 101 that one thing that leads to inflation is devaluing the dollar. And when you're spending trillions of dollars, and let me be fair, though, it wasn't just a Democratic thing. The Republicans did this last year, too.
Yeah.
I mean, in the response to COVID, which a lot of us feel like was an over-response and a lot of spending that didn't need to be done because there were a lot of shutdowns that should have been more targeted than just shutting everything down and then spending trillions we didn't have to make up for it. But the Republicans were all in on this too last year, okay? So I'm not giving them a pass. But when you spend money that we don't have, when you say, I want to spend another $2 trillion, that pushes inflation, that raises prices. That's going to make inflation even worse.
But let's also not forget that there are supply chain issues involved, which have nothing to do.
Ships backed up in port.
Right, ships backed up in port, but also because of the pandemic, shortages in labor. having people who can take things off those ships. So that's part of it.
And we reported today a record number of people quitting their jobs last month, which, you know, may have something to do.
People are quitting because jobs are so plentiful. So they have choices. So I read, a Post story today about this, how people are quitting in part because they can go get a better job somewhere else, and so they're doing it.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, lots of people are quitting their jobs, but there's a labor shortage. I mean, where the jobs are where most people don't want to go, it seems.
Last thing I want to bring up, we're not going to be able to cover it in 2 minutes, but it is redistricting. Infamously, after there's a census, every state has to redraw the lines for congressional and legislative districts. Jonathan, just quickly, there's been a lot of partisan gerrymandering, districts that don't really reflect where people live. Is it going to get any better this year? What are we headed for?
No, it's not going to get any better this year because this happens every 10 years. Gerrymandering is a bipartisan effort. Republicans, if they're in control, they draw lines that favor their candidates. If Democrats are in the majority, they draw lines that favor their candidates. What would help this is if Congress would have passed the original Freedom to Vote Act, which would have set up nonpartisan district commissions, but that went down in the ball of flames.
Yeah, and I'm someone that always says there's no really such thing as a nonpartisan committee, commission, anything like that. This does happen every 10 years. I will say this, every 10 years, now if you look at every 2 years, yes, there's about a 90% reelection rate in Congress, but every 10 years, there's a huge turnaround. We have the most diverse Congress we've ever had now. We have more women in Congress than we've ever had before. So it does change despite everyone's best efforts to keep things the same.
Your state of Ohio today, somebody sent me some numbers this afternoon, 54% of the vote Republicans won over the last decade, and yet they occupy 75% of the congressional.
And that's because they win the key seats that get to draw the districts. So I remember back in the 80s being an Ohioan when the Democrats controlled all those key seats and they drew the districts to gerrymander for Democrats. So to the winner goes the spoils, and that's the ability to draw districts.
Yep.
We're watching it. Gary Abernathy, Jonathan Capehart, thank you both.
Thanks,
Judy. Appreciate it.